How it was done is my subject. Why plays a role, of course, along with financing and the political argument. But how is the theme? The cast of characters is immense. The workforce, primarily Chinese on the Central Pacific and Irish on the Union Pacific, but with people from everywhere on both lines, at its peak approached the size of the Civil War armies, with as many as 15,000 on each line. Their leaders were the big men of the century. First of all, Abraham Lincoln, who was the driving force. Then Ulysses S. Grant and William T. Sherman. These were the men who not only held the Union together north and south, but who acted decisively at critical moments to bind the Union together east and west. One of these was president. A second was soon to be president. The third turned down the presidency. Supporting them were Grenville Dodge, a Union general who was the chief engineer of the Union Pacific and could be called America's greatest railroad builder. Jack and Dan Casement, who were also generals during the war, and then the heads of construction for the line, and many engineers and foremen, all veterans, who made it happen. Dodge, and nearly everyone else involved in building the road, later commented that it could not have been done without the Civil War veterans and their experience. It was the war that taught them how to think big, how to organize grand projects, how to persevere. The financiers could move money around faster than anyone could imagine. The Union Pacific was one of the two biggest corporations of the time. The other was the Central Pacific. It took imagination, brains, guts, and hard work, plus a willingness to experiment with new methods to organize and run it properly. Many participated, mainly under the leadership of Thomas Dock Durant, Oakes Ames, Oliver Ames, and others. For the Central Pacific, the leaders were California's Big Four, Leland Stanford, Collis Huntington, Charles Crocker, and Mark Hopkins, plus Lewis Clement and his fellow engineers, James Harvey Strobridge as head of construction, and others. Critical to both lines was the Mormon leader Brigham Young. The others were led by the surveyors, the men who picked the route. They were later-day Lewis and Clark types, out in the wilderness, attacked by Indians, living off buffalo, deer, elk, antelope, and ducks, leading a life we can only imagine today. The surveyor who, above all the rest, earned everyone's gratitude was Theodore Judah. To start with, the Central Pacific was his idea. In his extensive explorations of the Sierra Nevada, he found the mountain pass. Together with his wife, Anna, he persuaded the politicians, first in California, then in Washington, that it could be done, and demanded their support. Though there were many men involved, it was Judah above all others who saw that the line could be built, but only with government aid, since only the government had the resources to pay for it. Government aid, which began with Lincoln, took many forms. Without it, the line could not have been built, quite possibly would not have been started. With it, there were tremendous struggles, of which the key elements were these questions. Could more money be made by building it fast or building it right? Was the profit in the construction or in the running of the railroad? This led to great tension. The problems the companies faced were similar. Nearly everything each line needed, including locomotives, rails, spikes, and much more, had to be shipped from the East Coast. For the Central Pacific, that meant transporting the material through Panama or around South America. For the Union Pacific, it meant across the eastern United States, then over the Missouri River, with no bridges, then out to the construction site. For much of the route, even water had to be shipped, along with lumber. Whether the destination was Sacramento and beyond, or Omaha and beyond, the costs were heart-stopping. Except for Salt Lake City, the lines were building into a void. No one lived in Nebraska west of Omaha, or in Wyoming, Utah, or Nevada. There was no market awaiting the coming of the train, or any product to haul back east, except the Mormon city, which was a long way away until the lines met. There were problems with Indians for the Union Pacific, Indians who had not been asked, or consented, or paid for the use of what they regarded as their lands. For the Central Pacific, there was the problem of digging tunnels through mountains made of granite. That these tunnels were attempted, then dug, was a mark of the American audacity and hubris. The men who built the line had learned how to manage or direct in the Civil War, and there were many similarities, but one major difference. Unlike a battle, there was but one single decisive spot. The builders could not outflank an enemy, or attack in an unexpected place, or encircle. The end of track, the place where the rails gave out, was the only spot that mattered. Only there could the line advance. Only there could the battle be joined. The workforce on both lines got so good at moving the end of track forward that they eventually could do so at almost the pace of a walking man. And doing so involved building a grade, laying ties, laying rails, spiking in rails, filling in ballast. Nothing like it had ever before been seen. Urgency was the dominant emotion because the government set it up as a race. The company that built more would get more. This was typically American and democratic. Had there been a referendum around the question, do you want it built fast or built well? Over 90% of the American people would have voted to build it fast. Time, along with work, is a major theme in the building of the railroad. Before the locomotive, time hardly mattered. With the coming of the railroad, time became so important that popular phrases included time was, or time is wasting, or time's up, or the train is leaving the station. What is called standard time came about because of the railroads. Before that, localities set their own time. Because the railroads published schedules, the country was divided into four time zones. And it was the railroads that served as the symbol of the 19th century revolution in technology. The locomotive was the greatest thing of the age. With it, man conquered space and time.